Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, there's something I think we should talk about that we've not talked too much about, I think. Several things, I guess, we should talk about. So we've talked a little bit about, I don't know if we've done it on this show or if we've done it in the post show.
We talked about this a lot in the post show.
Right.
And by a lot, I mean like twice, but
that's a lot for us, you know. Given how consistently inconsistent we are, you know, I think that's quite a bit. We've talked about AGI quite a bit, or
Yes,
the
artificial
artificial.
general intelligence for those
Yes.
who are not up on their acronyms
Yes.
and initialisms.
Yes. Not to be confused with the general artificial intelligence that I like to call it all the time incorrectly. So, anyway.
Right.
David, just give us a brief overview of what an AGI
Oh, let me just
is.
explain AGI.
Explain, will you please?
Explain AGI. Okay, well,
Don't mansplain,
most
just
people
explain.
have heard the concept of an artificial intelligence, AI. Intelligence is a difficult thing to define, but a simple way to think about it is that intelligence is the ability to solve problems effectively and efficiently. And the more you must be able to solve a problem effectively to be intelligent in some respect. And the more efficient you are at it, the more intelligent you are said to be.
Okay.
Another way to put that is being clever, being presented with a problem and being able to come up with a solution without being told the steps you need to do it. That's intelligence. And so we can create, we're already creating simple AIs that can do specific tasks. They can meet specific goals, such as speech recognition, image categorization, things like that, object detection. But these, while they, in their particular roles, are better than any individual human could be at those roles when properly trained, they're not general purpose. And I'll take CGP Grey's example in his wonderful video, Humans Need Not Apply. No, actually, it wasn't that one. It was the one just about how AI works. I forget what that one was titled. Anyway, but where we have an image classification bot that if you give it an image, it will tell you whether it contains a B or a 3. But if you show it something that's not a B or a 3, such as maybe a dog wearing a bee outfit of some sort, it will very confidently tell you that it's one of those because it doesn't know that anything other than bees or threes exist.
Right.
And due to the way that neural network training works, those that express uncertainty end up getting filtered out very early. So it will very confidently tell you the wrong thing. So they're not general purpose. So that's the difference between specific intelligence versus general intelligence. And specific intelligence is not a technical term. I'm just using it to differentiate it from general intelligence. So general intelligence is more akin to what humans have, where we can encounter a new thing that we didn't even know existed and figure out how to do things with it. So an artificial general intelligence, an AGI, has this sort of generally applicable intelligence, but is a machine. And the type we're going to be talking about philosophically in today's episode will be those that have surpassed human capabilities, because those are the ones that are philosophically relevant.
Right. I think it's a good time at this point to maybe if you're more interested in talking about or learning about AIs or AGIs in general, I think we could safely recommend Robert Miles's YouTube channel.
Yes, Robert Miles is a I'm not going to say that he's an expert on the topic, but he's very knowledgeable about it and is very concise and concise yet thorough in his explanations of different, specifically his area of interest is AI safety research. Ways that you can get AI development wrong and create huge problems you didn't anticipate.
Right.
And sometimes ways to get around them.
Exactly.
But a lot of these are still way up in the air. This is a very new field.
Yes. And a good, I think a good primer, however you want to say it. I've heard it both. Would be, he's guest starred on a couple of computer file videos where he goes very broadly into what these AGIs are. So that might be a good place to start. And then once you kind of get a feel for it, you know, of course,
right. You might. Yeah. I think he does one on computer file, which is just an introduction to AI safety. And I think he explains the stamp collector bot, which is used as an analogy in a lot of these, as well as and then a good example of a type of problem that needs solving that is tricky is the stop button problem. Right. I think that was also a computer file episode.
Yes, he goes into those two and computer file and all of those videos. I mean, honestly, is it Brady Huron who does all that stuff? All the file videos, or is he just...
Brady at least started then. There's somebody else who's doing the computer file interviews now. I don't know his name.
Right. Anyway, great intro segments into these topics, and just to maybe if you wanted to gauge if you want to learn more. But that's enough about repping other people. let's get into what we kind of wanted to talk about, because we've discussed, more specifically, in our post-show episodes, the few that have been recorded... about this topic, we kind of talked about how the world would look if one of these AGIs is actually created. Like, we are able to actually create one that is safe enough, you know, like, safety problems aside, assume things go well, there are still the human
problems not related to the AI itself,
right?
But how society will change by this thing's very existence.
Right. So let's just kind of talk a little bit about some of the problems that are going to kind of arise. I think the first one that we should talk about, and it's not on this short list we have here, I don't think, but I think it's worth talking about a little bit, is I think you're going to see an expansion of what you're already seeing with automation in general. Because an AGI will, by definition, or at least I don't know if an AGI or if a, you know, a super intelligence.
Sure, that's the class of them that we're talking about, a super intelligence.
Sure. It can do anyone's job better than them at this point, like, theoretically. Like,
right.
Or it could learn to do that job.
At least, yeah. Yeah, it by definition, can outclass any human at any task.
Right.
Intellectually speaking.
Yes.
Yeah, it all depends on what tools it's equipped with as to whether it can physically do them, but...
Right. So
then that's just a logistics problem, and we can figure that out.
Or it can figure that out. That's the other thing.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It has the intelligence to just tell us what to do to build the machines, like what we need to bring it so that it can get what it needs to do those jobs.
Right. Or, again, going even further, it doesn't need us to do that. It can manifest those things itself.
Depending on what it's got already.
Yeah. Sure. So regardless of what problem it decides to solve or what we've tasked it to solve, it will be better at than any person. So at this point now, the world's foremost engineer, if not expert, for any specific problem is now a machine. And the other benefit of an AGI like this, or anything software-based really, if it felt the need, it could just make duplicates of itself or split off sub-nodes of itself to do any job. So theoretically, right, any job could now be automated out.
And we have reason to believe that an AGI would seek to do this.
Sure.
Like, it's just a good strategy. Yep. Even for the purposes of preserving itself, which is another, and I'm going to forget the name of this term. I used it on the post show, but I forgot what it is already. But there's a name for things that, like, so any intelligence must have a goal that it's trying to reach. But there are certain other goals, like intermediate goals, that are just good or required for any other goal you're going to try to do.
Sure.
So, self-preservation. We don't have to teach an AGI to care about its own well-being. It will figure out through its own intelligence that if it dies, it will fail to meet its goals.
Right.
So it needs to protect itself. And so an easy way to do that is to make clones of itself. It doesn't care about its own individual safety per se, so long as its goals get met, or it reasonably believes that its goals will get met.
Which it can guarantee almost by creating more of itself.
More of itself and distributing itself in places far and wide so that a localized disaster will not destroy it.
Exactly. So you're going to have this immediate human problem of, well, let's just be frank. There's an inequality problem that exists here. We already kind of see problems with this today between people. I think it can be summed up in the phrase, you think you're better than me? Like, that's mm-hmm. a phrase that is a part of human psychology that represents something in human psychology that we take issue with. And not only that, but we tend to view excess advantage as unfairness.
Right.
So, and you, like I said, you already see this, you know, well, why should this person who, and it usually comes down not to the fact that that person's more intelligent, it's that it's like half an inferiority problem. So my insecurities and my inferiority makes me feel threatened, but it's also a problem of, generally speaking, the more capable in a free market system tend to be better rewarded. Not always, but that's at least in a meritocratic system what you end up seeing. So now that you have this thing that's not even a person that can do your job better than you, people don't like that, you know. So there's like this human psychological response to this problem, I would think, anyway.
Right. And we're already seeing this with specialized intelligences. Like,
yes.
The need for store clerks is rapidly dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Their job can be replaced by a machine today, depending on what exactly their responsibilities are.
Sure. I think there's an interesting, I think I've had interesting experiences with speaking to people who are in these jobs about this. So, there are these two store chains. I won't go into specifics. One's a international chain of department stores or general stores. And the other one, as far as I know, is more locally based, or it's regional. One, the regional one, is employee owned. That's how it's marketed itself. And the other one is just a big corporation, top down, normal style. Well, of course, the big top down, they've implemented these self checkout robots, right? Don't be wrong, they still have human checkout lines, but they're quickly disappearing. You know, like the longer this we go, there are more self checkout groups with a single person overseeing a greater number of checkout stations and fewer one person checking out one person kind of things. However, in the employee-owned and operated stores, they've yet to implement self-checkout. And so speaking to people who have worked in both environments, and one particular person who has worked in both environments about it, it's definitely been made clear. I know the person that switched went from the big international company to the employee-owned, you know, regional company, because they were changed to a job they didn't want to do. They wanted to just be a cashier. They were in college at the time. Being a cashier is a very simple job. You can stay in one place.
Stand in one place and take people's money.
You take people's money and you scan their things, and it's very simple. Granted, I know it's probably more complicated than that, but whatever. We're not getting into the nuances of the job. We're just saying this is
it's
the goal.
It's not strenuous work, though.
Right.
Or disgusting work, depending on what... You know, there's lots of jobs to be done at, say, a supermarket.
Sure.
That may not be desirable.
Now, when the... their aisles got taken over and they needed fewer cashiers. So one of the options they had was to either retrain to be one of these people that managed a checkout station. Well, that was a lot of extra work to just do they're being retrained to do an entirely different job, or to go do the already other parts of their existing job that they didn't like anyway, like stocking and stuff. So they were like, well, I'm going to go work at this other store. And they applied and got the job at the new store just because they still had cashiers. That's all you did. You were a full-time cashier. And that person has a very negative opinion of self-checkout. And so do a lot of the people that I talk to that work at the employee owned business. And they are the reason they don't have self checkout, because the people that work at this, the employee owned, get to vote on these types of sweeping changes. And they all have this negative opinion of them, not just from the, well, it all mainly stems from the, we want to try to protect our jobs as much as possible. And we exist in a niche where people who come here don't like self-checkout either. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. The customers don't like them either. So it's a win-win. People
for now.
Who want to be cashiers get to be cashiers. And the people who want to deal with a cashier get to deal with a cashier.
Correct. Whereas some of the people I've talked to in these bigger stores love them, because the person who oversees these 15 robots doesn't have to do very much human interaction. That's not something they
find enjoyable.
No,
only when something goes wrong. Yeah.
And even then, now, they're a little handheld. They can just resolve the problem from the end of the aisle once they're notified of a problem. They don't even have to go over to the customer.
Usually, yeah.
Usually, the customer just looks over at them and they've already seen the problem and they give them a thumbs up and they go back to scanning their stuff. And for me, being the person that prefers doing self-checkout because it's quicker that way, I can go as fast as I feel like I need to. You know, I'm not, you know. And usually it's just easier for me because I don't particularly like dealing with people. It works quick. It works better. So it's interesting to see these two groups of people on either side of this of the aisle on this. But the vast majority, though, do not like them in general. Like, even the person who does like self-checkout, and that's their job, is to oversee these self-checkouts now, they like them for a fairly, I wouldn't say unique, but maybe a minority opinion reason, which is I don't have to deal with people. And I don't want to get into the statistics on preference, but even that person said they kind of lamented the fact that, yeah, well, it was a rough transition because we used to have a lot more people working here and now we don't, you know. So that's just a insight, I guess, into kind of that attitude. They just view it as unfair, you know, in a large way. And even the people that work at the employee owned don't like that big company that they used to work for anyway, you know, because they viewed that was unfair. You know, like, oh, why do these people get to make decisions? You know, they don't even work, you know, they're not on the ground doing what we're doing. And so I don't know that there's a way to solve that problem. I just think that that's a human problem, not necessarily an AGI problem.
That's not an AGI problem. Well, you'll have to run into the, like, eventually this employee-owned company is going to have to run into the economics of the issue, which is, like, let me just make this clear. Self-checkouts are not even an example of a simple artificial intelligence.
No, they're not.
These are easy for a human to build. There's no AI involved here at all. It's nothing compared to what an AI could actually do, even a simple one, to overhaul the logistics of a supermarket in such a way that they could completely outclass the smaller store and they would lose just on an economic basis. Like, once the supermarket's costs get so low that the price at which they can sell their goods for is less than the cost of the employee-owned store, they're done.
Right. Well, and to give you an example of this, you know, I watched an interesting thought piece on how that could be done. And one of them is just using what's already, like, the problem is not, the way AI is going to come in to help solve the problem is taking what already exists and not necessarily having to implement new hardware. So look at the big chain supermarket. There are cameras everywhere. There are microphones everywhere, you know. So this, you could theoretically hook all of these inputs into an AI that could just track every single person in the store and track every single thing that person picks up and puts in their cart. And then as the person's walking out of the store, automatically calculate their total and just tell them, here's the list of things you bought. Please review it. Because and it's used, and the way it's using AI in this case is it may not know exactly what the person had, but it can make really good, confident guesses as to what you actually picked up off the shelf, not even needing to know where everything gets stocked. It can just look at the box and then have connection to the internet and go figure out, okay, it was a yellow box of roughly this dimension. Well, there's only, you know, this is a cereal box. I'm pretty sure. Okay, so boom, it's a cereal box. Let me figure out what brands and then compare it to an internal roster of what I have or manifest.
Right, this would even work for cases like where you're walking down an aisle and you see something that somebody else put on the shelf that doesn't belong there, but you decide you wanted to buy it. The machine could still figure out that you're getting that thing.
It could still figure it out. And then so at that point, you don't even really have the need for self-checkout lines anymore. You just put whatever you want in your thing, and then as you're leaving the store, you know, it keeps track of where you are the whole time. So as soon as you get to the thing, it just pops up on a screen. Here's the list of things you got. Make sure I didn't get anything wrong. If I did, remove it. If you bought anything else, add it and then check out. And even if it gets it right 90% of the time, which is for an AI is a pretty actually low score, you know.
Yeah, very low score.
So, but even if you get it right 90% of the time, you're reducing the amount of time needed to check out by 90% most of the time. I'd say maybe 80% because of that 10%. If you have to remove all of those items and add 10 different items, it would be double. But still, it's still faster than scanning every single thing and then walking out with it.
And also, depending on what the items are, it might be worth it to just not even bother letting the human correct it. Even if you have to take a small loss because they got something that they didn't get charged for. Oh, well, get them out of the store, get the next customer going, we'll make it up in sales.
Well, and that's what they already do. You know, most self-checkout places factor in the acceptable loss of, but it's still cheaper than me hiring X number of people and
paying. Right, it's going to cost me more to hire a person to stand there on the clock, making sure that people don't steal this stuff, than it is to just let them walk out with the product.
Sure. And it's an acceptable loss. But it's an acceptable loss that a store that operates a full staff can't accept. So that's maybe a better example of how an AI specifically could, and this might be an actually a group of AI. You have an AI that's figuring out what products are, you're having an AI that tracks people using facial recognition or features, so on and so forth. You know, it's a group of AI that are all working together that are using existing hardware to solve a problem. And that's the kind of solutions that people are looking for right now.
Well, right. And that's the power of intelligence. You can take what you've got and solve problems with it.
Yes. You're not purpose building a new machine to solve a problem. You're putting a new software in that takes advantage and solves the problem. So anyway, so we've identified the problem as essentially people just won't like it. But I'm of the opinion that won't matter because it's not
economics doesn't really care
about people
about your opinion.
Right,
it's just gonna make more money.
Well, and another thing is a lot of people don't, I think the way you mitigate this problem, if you need to, because to be frank, that you could have enough people concerned that it actually could be a problem, you know,
like, yes, if everyone hates you enough that they don't shop at your store, then you're going to be hemorrhaging money. Yeah,
even worse, you know. But the way you mitigate this problem is what you would do anyway. I'm just going to lower my costs.
Exactly. You've lowered your costs so much, so now you can lower your prices to the customer.
Yep.
And most people could really use the extra, you know, $30, $50 a month that they could save on groceries from you lowering the costs.
Right. And that's something you don't even necessarily need to communicate to people.
No, they're just going to figure it out. They're going to figure out, well, I don't really like it, but I'm going to put up with it because I'm saving a lot of money.
Yeah. And most of the time, the customer doesn't care too much about the employees anyway.
No.
You know? And it's not because they don't like humanity. It's just because, well, we look out for number one first. That's a normal human trait, is looking out for yourself. And
now, a problem that you could run into is that it depends on what percentage of the population from which you make all this money, or from which you intend to make all this money, currently works in a job that your machines are about to replace.
Exactly.
Because if everyone loses their job, now there's no money to be made because nobody has income.
Well, and I think the bigger scale problem is not, okay, I'm just going to use the name of the international chain because everyone knows this name, Walmart. Okay. Facts are, Walmart doesn't tend to exist in communities in which most of the community members are Walmart employees. That doesn't happen most of the time. So for Walmart, it doesn't matter. But what happens when Walmart and the other grocery chains that do together employ, or say all of the businesses asynchronously deploy these systems and end up putting half of the town's population out of work. Well, now they're all going to suffer, not because they coordinated this action, but because of the exact opposite. They didn't coordinate this action because they didn't need to before. And with an AGI specifically, I think the real thing about AGIs is that they're going to just exacerbate what technology already does, like could be doing. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to run across those problems where small towns are going to essentially just go defunct because the Walmart that moved in brought resources, but it's not putting anything back into the community. You know, and but if all the gas stations do the same thing, and before you know it, a majority of the service jobs, of which make up over half the economy, go away.
Right. And that's been the concern of folks in the United States for a little bit now, that the United States is moving toward a highly service-based economy. Well, we're already there.
Yeah, we've been
there. We've been there, and it's only getting more so the case that products don't really get made in the United States. Services are done in the United States. And so when you have all these machines coming up who can do all the service jobs, well, what's everyone going to do?
Right. And I think it's becoming more of a prescient issue in, like, the cultural conversation. You know, what do? And then a good example of this is, more recently, we've even had a presidential candidate who ran on a platform including UBI. And that's one of the things that we do have on our list to talk about.
Yes.
Which is the universal basic income solution to the problem of, what if you just can't employ enough people? You know? And this is not something that...
For those who haven't heard of it, UBI, universal basic income, is literally the policy of, we will just pay you every month for existing.
The government.
I.e. Yes. Also... You get money for existing. You are entitled to money for being a citizen.
Right.
Or maybe not, depending on what the qualifications are.
Yeah, citizen or resident, depending.
Sure.
But pretty much, though, if you live here, your basic necessities should be covered. Because that's the real thing that UBI is trying to solve. It's not, and that's where they come up with their, you know, the figure for how much money you're guaranteed. It's designed to cover basic housing, basic food necessities, and there is a small little bit left over for you to spend, so that if you were to just be unemployed, or unemployable in this case, you wouldn't have to go through any other government system necessarily. Now, I'm sure there are many different ways this is implemented, but as a whole, UBI is just, you exist, here's $1,000 a month or whatever. Some amount
that is workable. Yeah.
Yeah. And ideally some amount that you could realistically live on and maintain the minimum standard of living.
You would not live in luxury, but you could meet what is perceived as the standard of living.
Yes. Now I don't know that we've talked about UBI before at all.
I don't think so.
So a short little bit on how I feel. I'm not going to speak for you necessarily, but I think we have some similar opinions on UBI. UBI, when not necessary, is just wealth reallocation is all it is.
Yes.
It's wealth redistribution.
Yeah.
And that money has to come from somewhere. And that money is going to come from taxes. Period. And I know that one of the common answers to this is, well, we'll just tax the businesses that put these people out of work. Well, businesses don't pay taxes. They technically do, but they really don't. Any tax you put on a business, you're actually putting on the patrons of that business, realistically. Because the business doesn't just generate wealth out of nowhere. It generates wealth from citizens. So it's just some citizens paying taxes to go to other citizens, and it's just wealth redistribution.
Right.
Which I tend to disagree with pretty wholeheartedly, you know, taxes being theft and all. But so that's my problem with it. However, one of the things we wanted to really talk about is, what about in this AGI world where we're trying to transition to a post-scarcity society, which maybe the entire economic model is just entirely different? Does it become acceptable now or not, you know?
Right. Yeah. So have we talked about post-scarcity society before?
It's on the list, I think. I don't know that we've dug into it very much.
Okay, it's on the backlog, but no, we have not talked about it. Oops. There I am screwing up the list.
Wow.
I know. Okay. So no, we have not talked about it. So yeah. AGI is the way, or is a way into a post-scarcity society in which all of our needs are easily covered by the work of machines and people don't really need to work anymore. In which case the whole concept of capitalism, like, it still is present. Like, the forces of supply and demand still exist because they exist necessarily. But between social beings who have a concept of giving and taking things. But it's not necessary when you can go and just get whatever you want from a machine, or rather when a machine is physically capable of giving you at least whatever you need.
Right.
And maybe whatever you want, well, depending on how constrained your dreams are.
Right.
So we're in that type of paradigm. And so you have to rethink what does income mean?
Right.
Like, what's it for? It's, you know, in a world where not only nobody has to work, but nobody can work. No one wants to pay you to work.
Right. That thing, that's you the
are,
big difference.
You are so inferior to the machines. It is not worth anyone's time to consider employing you.
Right.
But we obviously don't want billions of people to starve to death because they have no work. So at that point, income in a UBI system sort of just becomes like a convenient way where we can take something that already exists, money, and turn it into a token of everybody gets some amount of this to spend on things, and they're not like the value of money may not even really come from the same places either.
Right.
I don't know, that depends on a lot of how like exactly how do you negotiate what you get from the machines, etc.
Well, I think what we're kind of skirting around here is that capitalism and most economic models actually exist to serve two problems, and it's one is the distribution problem of who gets what, because it's not infinite. And the way you break that system in the ideal, like in our theoretical model, the true post-scarcity society is there's a magic machine. It's not magic, but like through technology, it's magic that can make anything for effectively free. Because you can't break physics either, but say this machine were able to somehow pull from asteroid matter elsewhere, like, doesn't matter. We're just taking matter that normally is not usable and would never be usable, and it's in practically infinite supply because universe big, and I can just turn it into whatever you want, and the energy I get from that I also get from somewhere else that you would never even really be able to take advantage of either. So I'm just converting matter and energy into other forms of matter and energy that you do want. And not only that, I can make more of myself. So now each person has this machine and can theoretically make anything. So in the typical model of supply and demand, supply now becomes infinite, effectively. So supply can meet any demand. You know, TM, any demand. Most, all reasonable demands and most far-fetched demands can still be met within right. The confines of physics. So that's the, like, theoretical model. So in that case, the second problem that capitalism specifically is trying to solve is, which is the property problem of labor. So I can work, and from my work, I generate my own property that I can then, that's what I'm using to buy and sell. And you working, even if you don't make anything physical, your time is being used to make intellectual property, if you want, or you're putting work in and you're extracting value from your work. So it gives a way to connect one person's work to meet another person's demand. That's really what it's trying to solve. It's on both ends.
It allows people to be able to specialize in things, but also, like, it allows people to be able to do work that yields resources and products that aren't necessary for survival, but that are still desirable. But, like, for instance, you know, if I figure out how to make pencils or something, that's a useful tool. People want them, but if all I have is a bunch of pencils, I'm going to starve to death.
Right.
So, but also not everybody wants my pencils, but some people want a lot of them. So what I can do, this is really getting into currency, but from any system that has currency, capitalism emerges, barring some other interference.
Sure. Yeah. And so that's what I'm trying to get at, is that there's the two sides of the coin. It's you, the individual, being able to generate property and sell it. And then there's you, the individual, being able to have demand satisfied by supply, and figuring out how that supply is divvied. You know, those are both taken care of. What AGI does doesn't solve half that problem. It just solves one half of the problem, which is the supply problem.
Right. We now have virtually infinite supply.
Right.
Of whatever you want.
So in a world like this, though, you marginalize out the other half of the problem, which is, well, now anything I can make is valueless, essentially.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong. I understand there's also this category of the sentimental value of things, but what we're talking about,
practically speaking,
practicality, it's worthless. You know what I mean? Or its worth is much less than what it's sentimentally worth. So while AGI can solve the problem of supply probably a lot sooner and a lot easier than it can the problem of what do we do with people now, you know, and you may not want AGI looking at to trying to determine people's lives and what they do. You're like, okay, that's off limits, because this whole...
We're going to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah, we as humans will figure out what we're doing. You do what you're doing, but, you know. And so UBI is essentially a way of saying, well, why don't we enforce...
Just give everyone some amount of money and then pretend like everything's the same,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, it's essentially just pretending the old system still exists, but...
But nobody actually works for their money.
Right. And transitionally, I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea, because AGI won't bring us to that magic box post-scarcity instantly.
No.
If ever, you know. But it'll do it in different sectors at different times, right? So, I think one of the ones that CGP Grey talked about a little bit was the transportation industry. He wasn't talking about AGIs either. He was just talking about machine intelligence or just...
Self-driving cars.
Yeah. There are some jobs that are just a lot easier to take out than others and give to a machine, you know?
Right.
But
the transportation industry, if you didn't know, is huge.
Yes. The getting something from point A to point B problem is solved by millions of people. And then we're talking any point.
Lots of places have to go to lots of other places, or lots of things have to make it from one place to lots of other places all the time.
Right.
All the time.
And honestly, that problem is the bottleneck for almost any other problem of reducing distribution.
Yeah. Like, logistics is huge. Yeah.
Huge, yeah. It's a third of the master problem of creation, logistics, and consumption. Like, all things fall into one of those three categories. You know, it's either... Right.
But creation and marketing, which, if you didn't know, marketing is not merely a field about advertising, but the process of getting a product from your factory, or wherever it's made, into the consumer's hands.
To market. That's where the word comes
from. The market, yes.
So what happens when those people are all out of jobs, but we still have plenty of people that can be employed in the manufacturing? Well, for everybody who's not those people who did the transportation, you just saved a ton of money. And the goal of UBI is to say, okay, you're going to save money regardless, but instead of you getting all of those savings, we're going to take away some of that and give it to these people who were mitigated as compensation for... And honestly, you could probably even do this in such a way that the people who are getting the discount still get a discount on the fact that part of the supply chain for what they're buying is now automated, and then just turn that money over and redistribute it to the people who are now out of work. I don't like talking about it too much, because I don't necessarily think UBI in lieu of AGI is worth it, but you got to rethink the model when you're dealing with something like an AGI, or honestly just automation period, I think. So,
right. This problem is not AGI specific at all. It's just automation.
No, but an AGI will greatly exacerbate this problem.
Yes. Yeah, as soon as there is an AGI, great. Now everything can be automated. Literally every human job.
Mm-hmm. And, but it's asynchronous as to which one. And honestly, humans may not even get to choose which thing gets automated out first. The AGI might know better and say, oh, I'm going to do this one first or I'm going to do all the ones I can do right now based on my current.
It all depends on what its goals are. And this is right. Way the heck up in the air because nobody actually knows how to make an AGI. If they did, we'd make one.
Right. So, yeah, I think UBI might be a good way to solve the problem until we get to that point. And then once we get to the point where everything is AGI'd up and the AGI is doing it all, then we're, I think, really getting into the post-scarcity where realistically the UBI won't necessarily be necessary, but in order to transition our really bad at adapting human brains to the new system, we might keep something like that just to keep one person from being like, I'm going to use, you know, the fact that everything is practically free. It's not, but it's practically free. I'm just going to build the tallest building ever. Well, if everyone built the tallest building ever, that's going to put quite a load on the AGI and we may end up with end games that we don't want, you know.
And also safety hazards.
Like. Sure. And so we may put limits on what the, you know.
Well, and it's not like these things, right. They're practically free, but they do really have a cost.
Yes.
Really, it sort of becomes like the old days of computing where you had time sharing systems. We have this powerful machine, but everyone wants to use it at the same time. I say powerful, but obviously it's impotent by today's standards, but for its time it's a very capable calculator. Everybody wants to use this thing, everybody at the university wants to use this thing, but it takes time to run its calculations, so you pay for time on the machine or whatever, or it's allocated in some way,
right?
So like, yes, we have this system, the AGI, they can orchestrate things to get whatever you want, but it's going to take time and effort to do it. So the more you're asking for, well, the more you need to give up to get it.
Right. And I think that's going to be where we end up, is that we're going to figure out what the AGI might be able to solve this problem better than we could at this point. Once it's able to automate everything, it could essentially say, okay, here is the global production density or the global production index, the GDI, that I can make. I'm splitting it evenly amongst all humans. Here are your allotted credits for the year. Or month, or week, or day, or whatever.
Whatever period is most practical. Yeah.
Right. And you just get on a website like Amazon, and there is everything for a price. And you just spend your compute points that the AGI gives you, because the AGI won't care about how you spend your points. But, and it also still...
Or maybe it does, depending on what its goals are.
Or maybe it does, but it can weight those things.
It doesn't have to, though. Yeah.
No, but if it didn't, it's like, okay, you want a car this year. Well, my resources to generate you the car that you want are going to occupy this 0.000% of my ability. And so, and that is one half of what I can allot to you per year. And I'm automatically deducting my ability to give you food, like, you know what I mean? Because I don't trust you to feed yourself if I don't give, you know what I mean? Cause yes. You can't, cause
there will be people who would spend all their money on, just like they do today, even though they have jobs.
Yes.
People who spend all their money on other stuff and forget the important things, spend the rent money on their toy.
Right. Difference is though, the AGI won't feel bad about evicting you because it's resources.
It's a machine.
I think once we get to that point, this UBI number will initially be determined probably by people, and it's going to be set, and no one's going to be happy with it. Some people will think it's too high. Most people will think it's either too high or too low, and there'll be very few people that think it's just right. But it's a necessary bullet to bite until we get to the transition's complete, which once you have an AGI will probably be a lot faster than most people realize. And once the AGI is in place, it'll radically change the world itself, regardless of what humans care about, once it's got its goal. And then honestly, you know, we could even maybe set up that system, or it might just tell us that that's the system. It's like, okay, there are my process units for the year for you. I'm dividing them down per day, or like I give you, I you know, you have your daily allotment, you have your weekly allotment, your monthly allotment. And so you get some every day so that you can take care of yourself, like feed yourself or whatever. You get some every week to help you take care of things like, you know, things that you might only use once a week, toilet paper or whatever. I don't know. I mean, like a roll per week.
I was going to say, I use toilet paper several times a week. I don't know what you're doing here.
But I mean, like a roll might last you a week. Yes. So that's what that stuff's for. And then your yearly bonus is, all right, Christmas is here. This is when you can you get a big chunk. You know, I've taken 15 units out of every day, and then I give them all to you one time, and Christmas.
Right, so you have your Christmas bonus. Yeah,
there you go. And not only that, but it might even also be able to factor in an upkeep. It's like, oh, well, based on the things that I've given you, you know, I'm going to deduct so much because, like, say you want an AGI to grant you a home. You can pick any kind of home you want, but they'll all come with a cost and an upkeep cost. And what's interesting is the cost will stay the same, but the upkeep costs might change over time based on what the AGI is able to do or make more efficient. And it'll essentially just be like playing The Sims for yourself, but you have a guaranteed income. It's like your Sim is given this much every day, week, month, or combination of thereof, and you can build your life how you want. And if you find yourself into a corner where it's like, crap, I have upkeeped myself or I can't buy a new TV, I don't like this, well, downsize. And there will be a cost associated, but at this point, everyone's...
Well, and the thing that I was saying, like, it's not, like, a post-scarcity society is still not necessarily a post-capitalism society. So if I have something that you want, like, you could get this from the machine, just like I did, but if I decide, okay, I don't actually want this enormous TV. I didn't think this through. I don't really have a good place to put it or whatever. Or I've moved on to other ways to occupy my time. I don't want this in my house anymore. I will sell it to you for some of your credits for less than it would cost you to get it from the machine. Like, that still is a thing that can be done.
That still
capitalism still works.
Yeah, that could be done. Or who knows? Maybe you just give it up and the machine reclaims it and divvies it to the next person after fixing it. I don't know. What's interesting, though, is you actually might find yourself in a system in which you kind of have communism in the way that there is a central market controller. But the thing is, the central market controller is not a government. It's not people. It's the AGI that's acting on the actual behalf of the population, but instead of it being through policy, it's through market forces. So yeah. You get this weird convergence of, yes, there is a central market controller, but it's not a person. It's run on the algorithm. It's run on the formulas of capitalism because that's just reality.
Yes.
It runs on reality.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is a central system it's a centralized system that does it all itself. And so you get this weird thing where technically, yes, you commies, you get what you want. Like, yes, there's a central authority, but you also don't get what you want because it's not people. And it doesn't care about human life in the same way that you as a person might. It's not doing it because it thinks this person or these people, this group of people deserve more or less. It's divvying it all up evenly. Truly evenly.
Imagine actual equality. Yes.
Actual equality. And it's doing it because it understands, because that's the problem that kind of always goes awry with communism. It loves to write blank checks for things that it thinks are important, but it never factors in the cost correctly. That's what you, I think, always kind of see, is that we would love this great leap forward. Whoops, there goes 8 million lives. You know what I mean? Like, because there is a cost associated. The AGI will never forget the cost. It will always
write
balance sheet to zero.
Because it's intelligent.
Because it's actually intelligent, yeah. And I'm okay with that. Like, I am actually okay with that system because it's founded and functions within the scope of possibility that it can understand far better than anyone or even any organization of humans could ever do.
Right. Everyone, obviously, if we could figure out how to solve this problem, we would by now. 7 billion people and climbing cannot figure out how to solve this problem, but this machine can.
No, we can just theorize and best approximate, but this machine definitely could. Maybe not at the start, but by the end,
which will come sooner than
sooner you think. Than you think, and it will not be under your control of when it happens. That's the other thing that most people get scared about with AGI.
Right. That's the reason it's a safety problem, is that if you don't do this the right way, terrible things happen and you literally cannot stop it because it is smarter than everyone put together.
Right.
So
an, I was going to say the next bullet point.
Yes.
Which was the windfall clause.
That's exactly where I was going with
that. Cool. Well, tell us about what a windfall clause is.
Oh, geez. So the windfall clause, I might not be able to, it's been a little while. It's at a high level, it's an agreement that all these different, AI researchers come to as to what is going to be done once an AGI is successfully developed. A formalized, preemptive agreement about how this transition period is going to happen. Under the idea is, for most people, it is not going to be desirable that one person has control over this AGI and basically becomes a god.
Well, it's not so much that one person has control over the AGI, but it's more that one person gets to control all the profits and product of this AGI. At least that's what my understanding was.
Well, maybe some people care about that, but I mean, my issue personally is that, yeah, I don't want a person to have that kind of power, or a company, as it may be, to have that kind of power. It's dangerous. So since none of these researchers really know who's going to figure it out first, they can all agree now, okay, when we develop this thing, its purpose is going to be et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it will be owned by et cetera, everybody in so-and-so a way under these terms, et cetera, with lots of et ceteration.
Right.
So the, right. And the this can be done because of the uncertainty, because we don't know who is going to develop it first. Everyone is going to hedge their bets and say, okay, well, we're all going to do this and we're going to stick to this agreement, because if we don't, then whoever gets it first is a big winner and everybody else is a huge loser. It's not worth it. Let's all agree to cooperate beforehand, before there's a power dynamic at play.
Right. Well, yeah, the one I was talking more about is what to do with the resulting profits of this AGI, but the control is a question as well, because it's kind of both. You know, if you control it, you reasonably get to claim the profits. Exactly.
Yeah, they're one and the same, really. Right. They're directly linked.
Right. And like you said, this has to be done before, because it's just game theory right now. I mean, facts are, it's unlikely that you, as like, say there's 100 AI researchers working on this problem, just for the hypothetical. The odds are that you, one of the AGI researchers that are going to come up with the first one, is very, very slim. So I would
it's
much...
possible, but it's...
possible.
Right.
But it's like, I would rather have 1% of the result than zero.
Zero.
Considering that most of the people involved in this research all understand that 1% of that result is a lot.
A lot.
A lot.
When we literally solve scarcity, that's huge.
Absolutely huge. But the closer one company or group might get to solving it, the more confident they might be in saying, you know what, we're going to withdraw, you know, or we're not going to sign this because we think we're closer, and where we know that we're closer because we're all pretty open about our research to some degree. So once your certainty goes above that 1%, it actually, you know, game theoretically becomes more beneficial for you to just hold out. Robert Miles also has a video on this, and this is kind of where the
This is the direct inspiration for this topic.
So yep. full credit to him. Go watch that if you want more specifics, because I'm sure we butchered parts of it. But anyway, or in the case of profits, it's like, well, say, you know, whoever, if you don't sign this agreement and you become the one, you now have more wealth than has ever been really realistically conceivable by an individual company.
Right.
We're talking like Dutch East India Trading Company times a million, you know, unfathomable, filthy amounts of wealth. And the other part of the windfall clause has to do with how you redistribute that wealth if you were the one to come up with it, because, and it's also kind of a safety net for those involved. And at least I think the big benefit is getting them all to think about, what good does having literally unfathomable amounts of money when the rest of the world is starving and is going to march on your gates, like, to get food. You know what I mean? Like, yes. What good is all this money when you can't spend it? Because you've just eliminated anyone who will take your money.
Right.
You know.
It's the same problem that I mentioned earlier of the supermarket who employs everybody in town and then automates everyone's jobs away and has no money to be gotten writ large. It's
yes. Yeah. That's you now. So yeah.
That's you with the entire world against you.
Right. I'm not gonna lie, the first time I watched what Robert had to say about it, I didn't like the windfall clause personally. For what it actually does, which is now I liked that it wasn't enforcement. It's not
right. That was the thing that's the thing that got my attention, is that it results in wealth redistribution, but it's all voluntary.
Yes, I do like that it's voluntary. But one of the things that I didn't like about it was that it's involuntary until there's only two or three people who haven't signed up yet. But even then, it's still voluntary. It's just arm bending that in coercion a little bit, or it can leave open to coercion. For example. The example he gave is, well, once you get about 50% to sign it, the other 50% may, you know, are viewed as non-cooperative, right? So yeah. This 50% that signed it said, okay, we're not going to share research with any of the other 50%, thus further decreasing their ability to get it before. Again, still voluntary, because you don't have to share your research.
Right. Now these 50%-ish... 50% or more-ish research firms have just formed like a meta company together.
Or, yeah, coalition, essentially.
Yeah.
That we as a group are even more likely now to be the first ones. And just, we're going to push the topic of being first because it matters for a bit. But I do think we need to come back to that. But essentially, it's starting down the road to a process to where... And maybe this is a good thing. It just, at first, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Maybe the way he phrased it rubbed me the wrong way. But you're reaching a Nash equilibrium, essentially, of what will happen. And that's everyone ends up cooperating, because that guarantees
secures.
Well, it does guarantee. It guarantees that the worst outcome won't happen for everybody.
Right.
And that's what Nash equilibriums do, is... We can all agree that no one wants this, so because we agree to that, let's all forsake the best reward for no one having to get the worst, you know, punishment. So we're going to move to the middle, and that's just how we're going to line up. And so maybe it was just the way he phrased it that kind of rubbed me wrong a little bit, but at least it's all free will. Like, you and I could decide to be AI researchers and say, nope, we're going to run the risk. We're going to try to be the first ones, and we might win and we might lose. Who knows?
We personally will lose, but
yes. but anyway, but the most important part about that, well, the two most important things are, one, no one's figured it out yet. Like, this is whole pointless if someone figures it out before this agreement is reached. So the clock's kind of ticking on it. You know?
Yeah, hurry up and get everyone on board before the horizon, before it is visible over the horizon. Yeah.
Right. And the other one is, that's kind of a competing factor, is being first. So this is, as a concept, has existed for a long time. One of the only times a natural monopoly can exist without any interference is when you're first. If you're the first person to figure out how nuclear bombs work, you have a monopoly on nuclear bombs until other people figure it out. But what makes this a little different is, once you're the first person to figure out AGI, you will now win forever, technically.
Right.
Because your AGI will always have been smarter than their AGI, theoretically. Or it will.
Right. The logic here, like, an AGI will be able to improve itself. And so whoever gets started, like, even if somebody else figures out the same AGI, then whoever got started first will accelerate their improvement first. And the way that acceleration works is, whoever starts first will be going the fastest at any given point.
Yes.
Or even if somebody else figures out a more efficient AGI than you figured out, well, it took them longer to figure out that more efficient thing than your AGI did. Your AGI figured out that more efficient way before a human did.
Yes. Realistically, the only chance someone would have in coming second and still winning out is if the rate of acceleration of intelligence was faster than the pre-existing artificial intelligence's technological acceleration could get to. Like, essentially, it's vectors. It's like, where does, you know...
But it doesn't matter because...
But it won't.
Yeah, because the AGI is better than... like, we're asserting by definition this superintelligence is better at anything than any human. It is also better at coming up with designs for superintelligences. So it doesn't matter. Like, by definition, whatever another human comes up with, the AGI will already have at least that before they did.
Right. So this is the only time, really, where there is no getting even. It's not like nuclear bombs in the way that, oh, we figured it out, so we reign supreme for 5 years until the next person figures it out, right, or steals
physics
it.
Doesn't change. You can figure out nuclear bombs later and you have the same thing.
Yes, now you're back on an even playing field, and there may have been a margin growth, but...
Right, but this is an accelerating feedback loop.
Yes.
Whoever is first will remain first forever.
Yes.
Barring total destruction of the system.
Right. Which, unlikely, you know.
It depends. Like, I can conceive of situations in which something supremely unlucky could happen and cause destruction of the system. But yes, very unlikely.
So, that would be... that's interesting. And why windfall clauses are kind of important right now.
Yeah.
And not so much for the every person, but for the people who are trying to create these things, they're important. And they benefit everybody. Now, there's one question that kind of always gets brought up with the first company who comes up with it is you could theoretically install a permanent inequality because of it. That was one of the things that they're concerned about, that windfall clauses are very careful to try to avoid, which is everybody, like, say we go back to that system we talked about before, which is the AGI figures out, all right, I can dedicate this many compute units per person, so I'm going to allot them. Except for the person who created me, and they get two persons allotments forever, or until they die, and then it goes back to being even. Or they maybe build it with a constraint inside that says, nope, me and my offspring will always get two persons worth. Well, eventually, and that's an interesting thing to think about is, say you put that system in place, right? Me and my offspring will always get two people's worth. Iterate that 1,000 times, and you're going to, and you're essentially just installing a system that will grow disparately. Because now, and don't get me wrong, practically speaking, because how resources are and how many resources there are in the universe, and theoretically, as AGI will probably start looking outside of our planet, or it'll already have a plan to do that when it thinks it'll need to. No one's going to go hungry. There's not going to be this Elysium of people, and then those, you know, poor dirt dwellers that are in shacks. Everyone's going to be living like kings compared to now. But they're, because you're going to essentially just kick the can of the problem down the road to, well, in 50 generations, now essentially, you know, you will always have this small percentage that has more. And then people will always complain about that ad infinitum. It's just, they won't ever be able to do anything about it. And one of the things that I think windfall clauses are looking at is, instead of creating a system that's going to grow in disparity over time, you get a boost of the disparity just temporarily. But then over time, it reaches...
converge again. Yeah.
It converges back to now everyone's treated pretty much effectively the same by the AGI. And fortunately, from what I understand, is a lot of the people that are working on AGI all kind of have contemplated this based on... I can't say that for certainty. I've not looked at every single person who works on AGI. But the general consensus I've seen is that most of them agree that this is a problem that they're going to solve, that they're trying to solve, that will solve all other problems, and all human beings should be able to benefit from this. And they're looking at this, and you kind of have to be an AI researcher, I think, an AGI researcher anyway, you're looking at problems for forever, you know? And so you're already thinking in the scope of way beyond your own lifetime, you know? So when you're dead, who cares, you know? Like, so let's just let everyone have it all, you know? Or let's let everyone have their equal slice of forever, you know? But, it's interesting. I'm actually very excited about what it'll look like. Hope if it goes well, that's the big caveat. If it goes the way we hope it goes, I don't think we will ever be the same. We for sure will never be the same regardless.
We're not going to be the same anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think we can even begin to fathom how just good things can be.
Right.
You know, I'm not a religious person anymore, but I mean, I've not tried to grapple with a concept like this since I was religious and tried to grasp the concept of like heaven. Like, right. You know, that's really
how good can it get?
How good can it really get? And what's even scarier is this machine will tell you, oh, I'll tell you how good it can really get. Yeah. So those are just a handful of the problems that we're going to come across and trying to transition. I think, there's even more problems trying to transition just to normal AI, not even AGI. But who knows? You know, that's the thing. But what I think is key for us anyway is thinking that, you know, all of these systems that humanity has spent years, you know, what all philosophy is, you know, will be rendered essentially obsolete, just like anything else, you know?
Yep.
And that'll be the interesting thing to see is, and it's interesting to think about in the transitionary stages, like, what are we going to do about this? People think this. It's like, well, I don't know, but it'll be different. I think that's all I have to say on the issue for now, actually. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to discuss with this?
Nothing particularly comes to mind. I think this is a good one to think about for a while. But I think we're off to a good start. Like the fact that this has already been created, a windfall clause, and this will probably be iterated on in the future. This is promising. I had been for a long time worried about this problem. Like the messiest part of anything that can transition us or anything that can bring forth post-scarcity society, like right now is obviously mostly okay. And afterwards is going to be very okay. But that transitionary period, what happens? Very bad things could happen to transition to post-scarcity society. This is a great start to a smooth transition that everybody's okay with.
I agree. So I'm good.
Yep.
Philosophers.